Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Room for a little one? Wow, look at all this. It's getting a bit hectic over here. I've added in the gradient and it's starting to take shape.
So quite an ambitious panel to be making.
Yeah, it
is. Was it your idea?
Yeah, it was. If we can get it done, it's going to be really fantastic. It's going to have that wow factor.
Yeah, because look at that. That's, even as a knitter, that is terrifying.
Right, that's Game of Wool, Britain's best knitter. New episodes every Sunday at 8 p.m. on Channel 4, or you can catch up on channel4.com. James Dempsey is with us once again. You could feel the tension there. Are they just going to try and make a kind of bake-off version for everything now?
I mean, yeah, look, that kind of competition type reality show is easy to produce, right?
Yeah.
You cast people who are amateurs, but diverse in both their, like, in every aspect of them. You give them challenges. You want some of them to succeed spectacularly. You want some of them to fail spectacularly. And then you film it all and you don't have to pay them anything.
Yeah. So, like,
it's great, right? Now, I will say I am a knitter. Right. Knitting is one of my favorite passions. I picked it up from my mother-in-law. She knitted my tie for my wedding. I was knitting. Normally when I'm watching TV shows for this, I'm actually secretly half looking down and counting rows and stitches.
All right.
And I will say the knitting community is actually not usually kind or nice to this sort of attention, I would say, right? As in, like, we are very defensive of our craft because people often look down their nose at knitting, right?
Yeah.
And this is a real celebration, definitely, of knitting, but I don't think it's a very good TV show. Now, it is... first of all, my issue with it is that knitting in and of itself is a slow craft. That is the whole point. Mm. It takes weeks, months to produce a single garment. And here they are, you know, the 10 participants have, first of all, they have two challenges per week. The first is an individual one, and it's clear that they've been briefed in advance on what they have to do because they already come with a plan in mind. So the first thing they had to make was, I think they had 10 hours to make a tank top. And, like, to put that into perspective, it meant they had to knit with a very chunky style of wool, which is not pleasant to look at. So it immediately sort of diminishes the product because it's like a steroid version of a tank top. Then the second challenge is even more confusing. In the second challenge, they had 12 hours to work as a team to knit a cover for a sofa, right? But then, like, how do you judge who does, you know, who's bad on a team based on, you know, whatever metric of who designed it and who did what and who didn't live up to whatever? It was a little unclear. Now then, furthermore, the kind of, I would say, the usual running order of this kind of show is they get, you know, a jobbing comedian to act as the host of some kind, whose job is to go around and be nice and supportive, but tell funny jokes and, you know, occasionally in the bake-off do bizarre pieces to camera that are borderline racist and so on, right? Now, here they have gone with Tom Daly, who is a known knitter.
So that's his connection
there. That's his connection.
Better known for being a diver.
Best known for being a diver with very questionable taste. I would recommend people look up his house. It's not to my taste, put it that way, right? But he during the Olympics and during whatever, you know, other diving competitions one might partake in, he sitting in the crowd or sitting at the side of the pool or watching other participants in other sports, had his knitting needles, I would say, quite performatively. I mean,
knitters are judgy, aren't they?
Right. And he got a book deal out of it. And I presume he's wearing one of his own creations in this show, a sort of poncho that I would say stretches the limit of his creativity beyond what is acceptable. But anyway, his job is to then be the kind of Mel and Sue, you know, yeah. like person who go around and but really the value in having a comedian do that role is that they're funny, right?
Yeah.
And like I would say Tom Daly, for you know, obviously Olympic gold medalist, very successful in his own right, completely and utterly. I mean, the absolute pinnacle of sporting achievement. He is not funny. Right.
Okay. And like, does he try to be funny?
I think they tried to. The word I would use is whimsical. And for me, it didn't really work. Now, I will say many other of the critics' takes on this have been far more positive than mine. And it's not that I didn't hate it by any means. Like, and again, my issue with this is just that you are creating peril in a not perilous activity, right? Think about baking a cake is it can go flat.
Yeah.
It can burn. Yeah. You can drop it. Here, you have to somehow try and build peril by somebody missing a stitch. And trust me, in my limited knitting career of about 4 years at this point, I have dropped stitches and I have turned to my husband and said, don't even speak to me. For, you know, right? Like I said, there have been moments where it has been tense. But these are expert knitters, so trying to capture attention is often actually just their inability to finish the project. And that's a very unsatisfactory like criticism, as you know, in the show, that they just failed to finish in the time allotted, because then the time wasn't enough. Because this is a slow craft.
Yeah. And the judges, I mean, what qualifies a judge to be a judge in this?
So the judges are Di Gilpin and Sheila Greenwell. They are knit designers who would have shown like in fashion weeks and worked with, you know, major fashion labels, written many patterns and be experts in their field. So again, with that, you want like, look, you know, obviously Paul Hollywood kind of began as the nastier one, but not really nasty, right? And like Mary was the nice one and then Prue is the nice one, right? But Prue actually, I think, is kind of the tougher one. But anyway, here again, it's nicey, nicey, nicey. It's all extremely nice. And I look, I guess they put it in the kind of Glenroe slot of a Sunday evening, 8 p.m. If you are looking for something whimsy, that's the word I'm kind of settling on. If you are looking for something whimsical and you think you might pick up needles, I mean, in this, they had them knitting with like these comically, like they looked like borrowers, you know, like lifting up these comically sized needles as they're knitting the biggest yarn you've ever seen because they have like 10 hours to make a square meter of a fabric, which is actually really hard to do.
And so is it a different set of people every week? Is there going to be an ultimate champion or how does that all
work?
Yeah,
so there will be Britain's great best knitter, right? So we have 10 different cohorts. Like perhaps the most striking of them in the first episode was a German man named Holger who works on Savile Row. So obviously knows his way around tailoring and putting you know, clothes together. And he, you know, the first challenge was to knit this Fair Isle, you know, being a very patterned tank top. So he was knitting his, a very brave man named Gordon was doing a technique which is where you knit and then you actually cut it with scissors. And that was the main, you know, peril of the episode.
Yeah.
But they were all going, this isn't going to work. And then he cut it and it didn't work. So perhaps even the peril there was somewhat limited. But look, whimsy is what I'm going with. If you're looking for a kind of whimsical thing, I would say it's not as good as the Great Pottery Throwdown, which is a better, more polished show.
Yeah.
It's not as good as Bake Off, but if you need something else to kind of scratch that itch, then
okay.
go for it.
And so by the end of the series, there's a huge pile of ugly tank tops nobody wants. It's like, it'll be like Christmas. Right, our next show is I Love LA. That starts tonight at 10 p.m. on Sky Comedy, or you can stream on Now TV. Here's a clip.
Have you, like, spoken to her lately, or...?
I mean, like, every 3 months she'll send me these long-ass voice memos.
My voice memos are so narcissistic. It's like, bitch, you're doing a podcast.
I know. And did I tell you she still owes me $1,200?
And
she didn't even wish me a happy birthday.
It's 8 a.m.
Well, it's 11 in New York. She should be up.
Honestly, just because you're friends with someone at 22 does not mean you have to be friends with them for the rest of your life. You don't see me hang out with Avicii anymore, do you?
Yeah, Charlie, he died.
That's I Love LA. So... it's presumably there are people in LA.
Yes, yes. So this is from Rachel Sennett, who, if you don't know her name, you might well know her face. She kind of broke onto the scene in this independent movie called Shiva Baby, probably about 5 years ago. She was in a comedy with Ayo Edebiri from The Bear called Bottoms. And then she was probably the funniest person in The Idol, the very, very bad Euphoria kind of spin-off, not really, but kind of. And she's a jobbing comedian who honestly... her big breakthrough was this one viral moment where she was like a, you know, forward facing camera comedian during the pandemic, where she did this skit about, you know, come to LA, everybody's blah, blah, blah. I can't really say it on the air because it's not really appropriate. But she broke through in that she is a comedian who kind of did the open mic circuit and then because of that broke through and got various casting roles. And HBO said, OK, here's a bit of money. Go make your own TV show. And for probably the last year and a half, it has been known only as Untitled Rachel Sennett Project. And like a lot of hype has been built around her being the next big thing, Hollywood's it girl. Will she be able to pull it off while they create a vehicle project for her? She's the writer, she's the creator. And I thought it was actually a very funny opening episode. Now, the idea here is that they're trying to create, let's say, a Gen Z, I'd be reluctant to say girls, but like that kind of show, in the sense that a show created by a Gen Z wunderkind that will hopefully find an audience amongst a Gen Z viewership, but also like obviously older viewers as well.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is just generally this understanding of how Gen Z approach content online, which is not on their television.
Right?
Like as in anything that has been tried to be the Gen Z breakthrough show hasn't really managed to break through yet. I would say, you know, we have on Disney Plus, but I think it's FX in the US, Adults, which is actually very funny. I really, really liked it. A 10-part sitcom, a kind of Gen Z Friends, but only just renewed like in the last couple of days, many months after it debuted. So it must have found some sort of international audience. So HBO are throwing a bit of money at this because it is an 8-part 30-minute TV series, and it involves Sennett playing Maya. She's a 27-year-old, you know, it's her 27th birthday in this opening episode, where she is kind of like a talent agent and is hoping to kind of climb the ranks in this LA scene, and has a frenemy, this influencer who used to be her roommate named Tallulah, played by Odessa Azion, who lives in New York now, and they have this frenemy relationship when Tallulah comes back into her life with all of the baggage of, you know, influencing and what that means in LA, as in trying to get to the front of a queue when there's a bouncer not letting people in, or how you pitch yourself as an influencer to gain ground, but what that means versus your own financial dealings, etc., etc. Now, all in, it's really just about the horrible friendships of people, which we've seen a million times before.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that in Girls, we've seen that in Sex and the City, we've seen that, like, every generation gets its 20-something, 30-something-year-old female-led drama. And I'm here for it. I really thought this opening episode was funny and pithy and biting and sardonic, and like after overdosing on whimsy in the shape of wool, I was ready for this kind of seam and thread of not nastiness, but kind of like awkward, uncomfortable discomfort as friendships. You know, is it really, are they really friends, or are they just people who once upon a time liked each other and now are in each other's orbit? Rachel Sennett herself is like utterly believable as this character. I don't know what that means for me as her, you know, what I think of her as a person, but she, like, as this kind of difficult, fragile person with an ego, but who's also incredibly worried about, you know, lacking in self-confidence, she plays that role perfectly. The other people on the cast are Jordan Firstman, who's a comedian who's appeared in many things. He plays her friend Charlie. Josh Hutcherson, late of the Hunger Games and Five Nights at Freddy franchise, he plays her boyfriend Dylan. And True Whittaker, who is daughter of Forrest Whittaker, plays a friend Alani, who is a nepo baby in the show, so I guess playing to type, right?
Yeah.
All in, it's brand new. I thought as an opening episode where you're just getting to know everyone, I immediately understood who these characters were. It had a kind of like it reminded me a little bit of Hacks, in the sense that, you know, Hannah Einbinder is this kind of millennial misery guts character who is very, very watchable. And this was that kind of Gen Z miserablest. Very watchable, very funny.
Yeah. Hacks had great heart, though.
Yes. Now, whether this is heart, I've yet to see. We're only one episode in, right? Whereas, obviously, Hacks has now had 4 seasons. Yeah, I guess even in the original, like, even in the pilot, you understand what the dynamic is going to be.
Yeah.
Here in the pilot, we're just getting a sense of who these disparate group of kind of, like, we'll say, 5 friends are. But I'm very interested to see where she can take them.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, because you'd wonder when, you know, as you said, it's kind of almost the same formula endlessly repeated with each generation, who then kind of present this as, this is new and original, and oh my God, no one's ever been 26 before. And it's But, you know, if it's working so far, it's working so far. Right, our next show is Down Cemetery Road. New episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+. Here's a clip.
Welcome to our humble detective agency. Runaway teens, GPS tracking, credit checks, missing tortoises, no job too small.
Right.
Well, not just, I also find cats, cars.
Keys.
Missing people. Oh, you do your own housework. And you paint.
Enough with the private dick, Joe.
God.
He's just trying to impress you, Sarah.
So wait, what do you do, Zoe Boehm?
Same job as him, but better.
Okay, so is this a kind of an attempt at the launch of a new kind of a franchise?
Yeah, I would say it is, right? Yeah. So Mick Herron, who is a British writer, he created the Slow Horses franchise. I can't, honestly, I'd never heard of him before, Slow Horses. But Slow Horses has taken off. It is probably, you know, Apple's most consistent and regular show, in the sense that they, you know, the most recent season has ended and it ends with a trailer for the next one, which is obviously filming or filmed at this point. So clearly Apple thinks there's great legs in Slow Horses. What a mixed metaphor, right? And they are now looking at other Mick Herron titles that perhaps they can adapt.
Right. Okay.
And before he wrote Slow Horses, his first novel was this, Down Cemetery Road, which is part of a 4 series of books all about this private detective, Zoe Boehm, who's played here by Emma Thompson. Now, arguably, she's not kind of the lead of the, certainly the first 2 episodes. That's really Ruth Wilson of, you know, The Affair and other things. She plays Sarah Trafford, who is this art historian in living in Oxford, a very kind of beautiful middle class life. And she one night is having an awkward dinner party with her investment banker husband and a horrible colleague of his, when a gas explosion down the road leads to a huge shattering of windows and loss of life. And a house, a couple of, you know, buildings down the road has blown up, with the child in this house being the only survivor. And she is taken away to hospital, and out of her curiosity, Sarah, Ruth Wilson, goes kind of looking for her to give her a card and is unable to find her, and then becomes obsessed about, well, where is this little girl gone? And unbeknownst to her, but beknownst to us as viewers, is there's something else going on, because there's shady characters in a kind of MI5 type vibe in the background pulling strings. They're played by Adil Akhtar as Hamza and Darren Boyd as the letter C. That's all we know him as, and lives up to it. But basically, we know something is going on, and a rogue assassin, that is not a spoiler, has gone rogue in this little Oxford town. So in order to find this girl, she employs, as we heard in the clip there, a private detective, of which half of them is played by Emma Thompson, Zoe Boehm, and that kicks off our mystery. Now, I will say, if you are missing Slow Horses, this is like Slow Ponies, right? Like, it is very much a similar vibe. What I like about Slow Horses is not only are the characterizations very funny, but you never, like, I certainly never know what's going to happen, in the sense that...
Yeah, and they're prepared to lose characters.
Agreed,
as well,
right?
Yeah.
So the plot is very surprising. It turns quickly. You never quite know who's going to make it to the end of the season. And I will agree that is the case here in this. There are moments of surprising violence that come out of nowhere, even in just 2 episodes so far of this. And so, like, and yet it has that wry, sardonic, you know, sarcasm running through the humour again. So if you like Slow Horses, I have no doubt that you will find plenty to observe here. Like Emma Thompson's, you know, she's playing a hard-nosed private detective who takes no crap from nobody. Have I seen that before? Yeah. That's every private detective I've ever seen on screen, ever. I'm actually looking forward to seeing one who has like a positive family life.
Or who's a bit neurotic and have their feelings hurt a lot.
Yeah, right? But like, it doesn't break exactly new ground, but it does, it surprised me in every way that it broke the ground, right?
Yeah.
As in, it's treading a familiar path, but I liked the kind of odd turns it would take. I thought the acting was excellent. Wilson, like, I don't know if Sarah Trafford will make it to a second season, right? Obviously, there are 4 Zoe Boehm novels, so I can assume Emma Thompson has signed on for more than one. Why wouldn't they, right? But like, there's a great chemistry between the pair of them. So like, you know, my hope is that somehow Sarah gets taken on as a junior detective in the agency, but only time will tell. But like, yeah, I would get in on it now because I was late to arrive to Slow Horses. I watched the first episode when I came back and then I didn't watch it for about 3 years. And I have completely caught up because it is arguably one of the best things on Apple TV, which I was actually very intrigued to see that Apple like launched in November 2019. And, you know, I think 6 years later, it is really finding its footing now in the sense that it's found the kind of shows that work well and it has invested in them and it has abandoned the many ones that haven't worked well and they're just there if you get bored.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And Morwenna Banks is the showrunner on this, with the, which is kind of funny because the she did work on Slow Horses.
Yes.
She's the voice of Peppa Pig, is she?
She's the voice of Peppa Pig's mother.
Yeah, right.
Who I think is Mother Pig, but honestly, I don't I don't know.
No, but like, our older listeners, like she was on a Channel 4 comedy show, a sketch show called Absolutely, like a million years ago. So she's really had a hell of a career, that woman.
Definitely.
She's doing great for herself. Right, those three shows are Game of Wool, Britain's Best Knitter. New episodes every Sunday at 8 p.m. on Channel 4. You can catch up on channel4.com. I Love LA, that's starting tonight at 10 p.m. on Sky Comedy. You can stream on Now TV. And Down Cemetery Road, new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV Plus. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.